Pope Benedict XVI led Mass in Havana yesterday. You can hear the singing there. He also weighed in on a 50-year-old controversy, and he weighed in on both sides. The Pope met with Raul and Fidel Castro, and he urged them to open up Cuba to change. But he also called on the U.S. to end its trade embargo. We're joined now by Carlos Herr. He's professor of history and religious studies at Yale University and author of the memoir Learning to Die in Miami, Confessions of a Refugee Boy. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
You know, I thought it was ironic that President Raul Castro ended the visit and saw the Pope off by saying, "We do not think alike on all matters," which is abundantly clear. And yet there was no need for a big statement because there didn't seem to be a big demand from the Pope.
That's right. He made absolutely no effort to bring up the issue of human rights abuses in Cuba, which is the biggest issue. And he only made oblique references to it and very philosophical references in his sermon yesterday. So, in essence, the substance of his visit was mostly liturgical, right? It was the Mass.
Yeah.
And the processions. As far as the spiritual side of things goes, one can never tell how a religious ritual will affect people. And in Cuba, there's the added twist that only about 10% of Cubans go to church, and there's no telling how people might have understood that ritual, especially since most of them who were there were forced to be there by their teachers or bosses. So you can't tell about the spiritual side of things. On the political side of things, this was a very weak performance by the Pope.
And it suffers by comparison with the visit of John Paul, of course, which really brought about closer ties with the church. And you got Christmas declared a holiday. How do we kind of compare these two visits between Pope Benedict and then John Paul?
Well, the first visit by John Paul II initially aroused a lot of interest in Cubans in attending church and sending their children to religious instruction. But they very quickly found out that anyone who sent their children to religious instruction or attended church regularly would be penalized at school and at work. So that brought all attendance to church and religious instruction down immediately back to the previous levels. It did establish a closer working relationship between the Castro regime and the Bishop of Havana, Cardinal Jaime Ortega. And they did manage, after all, last year they opened a new seminary in Cuba. And the bishop has been instrumental in orchestrating the release of political prisoners. He did that in summer 2010. With one cruel twist, all the political prisoners who were freed, most of them were immediately exiled to Spain. And this was in order to get the European Union to lift sanctions it had put in place against Cuba because of its human rights abuses.
We're speaking with Carlos Herr, who's professor of history and religious studies at Yale University, author of the memoir Learning to Die in Miami, Confessions of a Refugee Boy. But to a certain extent, Carlos, how could we expect more from the pontiff? What kind of power does he have to affect real change in Cuba?
That's a great question, you know, and I'm a historian, and my specialty is church history. So I know that, you know, from nearly 2,000 years of history, popes are always on the losing end when it comes to church-state conflicts. Absolutely always on the losing end, and there's very little that they can do. But in this day and age, communication being what it is, and all the cameras and microphones being there, there's the availability of time, space, for the Pope to say certain things. The Pope has always been saying things through papal pronouncements, and that has its place. But in the public eye, there are things that could be said. John Paul II had much stronger words for Fidel Castro, who was then the maximum leader, than Benedict XVI had over these past few days in Cuba. His chastening of the men who run Cuba was very, very mild-mannered, One might even say that there was no chastening at all, except for very, very vague suggestions about opening up and so on and so forth. The Pope did ask for Good Friday to become a holiday for all Cubans.
But something they have to decide on next week, right?
Yes, it's next Friday. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I thought it was telling that one of Raul Castro's top aides didn't even wait for the Pope to leave the country before making the comment, in Cuba, there will be no political reform. There doesn't seem to be a lot of deference in among the Castro government, at least, for the Pope's requests.
No, there was none, and there was never going to be any. But, you know, back to your other question about what can the Pope do, I remember John Paul II, when he had his strongest words for Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro was in the audience clapping. So they love these papal visits, the Castro brothers, because they lend them an aura of legitimacy. And they know that it's a win-win situation for them.
Well, it may
not. It brings them money, too, because of all of the journalists and people who come to from abroad to cover the papal trip. So it's a win-win situation for them. And they come out looking a little shinier after these visits.
Well, even if it's not the Pope bringing them about, aren't there positive reforms going on in Cuba now?
Those reforms are all smoke and mirrors. They're not real reforms. All they've done is they've taken the black market that already existed and put it above the table so they can tax it. That's it. There's no real reform. They're superficial and hypocritical reforms that actually, instead of making things better for the Cuban people, have made everything worse.
Carlos Ayer is professor of history and religious studies at Yale University, author of the memoir Learning to Die in Miami, Confessions of a Refugee Boy. Carlos, it sounds as though you think the Pope's visit was a publicity trip, but he didn't make use of his publicity.
He did not. I don't know what went on behind closed doors and what results it might have for the Cuban church or the Cuban people. But as far as the public side of things is concerned, this will have only a negative impact,
right,
as I see it at this moment, right?
Carlos Ayer, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.